So, have you felt the vibe yet? We work hard, we play hard. Sometimes we play hard when we should be working hard,
right?
I guess the atmosphere that I've created here is that I'm a friend first and a boss second. Probably an entertainer third. Just a second.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly Wise here with you. Ethan is still out, but producer Nick is here to break down the big divisional game against the Washington Commanders, a meaningful December football game. But before we get into all that, I want to point out this show is sponsored by Mojo. How would you like to invest in your favorite players? Well, now you can. Mojo has over 300 NFL players listed, so you can invest in rookies like Garrett Wilson or Christian Watson. Christian Watson just won Rookie of the Month. Or superstars like Patrick Mahomes, the MVP frontrunner, Josh Allen, or Derrick Henry. Prices move with every play, every game, and every headline, and you can buy and sell instantly anytime all year long, so the action never stops. Mojo is live in New Jersey now. Download the Mojo app in the Apple App Store today and start turning playmakers into money makers. Must be 21 or older to use Mojo and located in New Jersey to make trades. Have a gambling problem? Help is available at 1-800-GAMBLER. Visit mojo.com for more info. Nick, meaningful December football against the Commanders. I believe if the Giants win this game, their probability of making the playoffs goes up significantly. Talk to me.
As we discussed on Tuesday, when we did the probability matrix, you went week by week and tried to organize what kind of scenario the Giants need to make the playoffs and to pretty much have a playoff spot locked up. You got to at least get a split with Washington. You win both, you're almost a lock to get in. Because like we said the other day, there's four teams competing for three spots. You get take care of business against Washington this week. This is probably, these are your winnable games. Your two against Washington and your one game against the Colts. Those are your three winnable games the rest of the way. Take care of business against Washington because Washington's a very similar football team to you. This is going to be a rock fight of a game. I expect the game in the teens. I expect turnovers. I expect ugly football. And again, the type of game that's only going to be on red zone once or twice when a quarterback throws an interception. This is not going to be a high scoring game. These are two teams that getting guys off the injury report. This might be the finally the week for Chase Young. The Giants are supposed to get Evan Neal back. This is going to be a very, very tight game because both these teams want to play the exact same way.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think both teams want to limit the amount of workload they put on the quarterback. They want to run the football. They want to play defense. They want to rely on the opposing quarterback to make a mistake and give them an extra possession. Very, very similar. I think one of the big things for the Giants is Saquon Barkley has not looked himself after that 35 carry game against the Houston Texans. How does he respond? This is a big game for him. There's a lot at stake over these last six games for Saquon Barkley and Daniel Jones. But the talk of paying a running back, you know, the pros and cons, you know, this is one of the things is does he wear down toward the end of the season? And I think the last 2 weeks surely give you that vibe. I mean, it wasn't just the fact that he, you know, the offensive line is run blocking, and the injuries in the offensive line and the run blocking. Well, there's also been times he just doesn't have that burst, which makes you, it's a cause for concern because he is their most indispensable offensive player right now, along with Andrew Thomas, but in terms of skill position. I also am interested to see, you know, what happens defensively with the return of Azeez Ojulari. Because I stated this on Twitter, and I truly do believe this. The strength of the Giants right now is their defensive line. With a healthy yeah. Azeez Ojulari, with Leonard Williams and Dexter Lawrence inside. Dexter Lawrence having a career year, a all-pro level type year. And Kayvon Thibodeau coming off his best game, I think, as an NFL player. So that's where the strength is going to be. The Giants are going to look at those four guys. When they need a big player, when they need a stop, they're going to look at those four guys to sort of try to get it for them, especially because of, you know, the weak linebacking core that they have. And then on top of that, the secondary, which is dealing with a bunch of injuries with Adoree Jackson and Xavier McKinney set to be out again. So Azeez Ojulari coming back, I think it gives a clear-cut understanding that, hey, this is our strength. We're looking at these four guys to make plays. And You know, if they're able to get to the quarterback, I know Washington's offensive line has been playing well as of late, but they're not one of the more elite offensive linemen in the league. They're not the Cowboys' offensive line. They're not the Lions' offensive line. I do think the Giants can take advantage of that. And if they can, I think that's where they can find themselves, you know, getting a turnover, having a short field. And I think where points are at a premium, if you're able to shorten the field for yourself, that allows you more opportunities to score points in a game that might not have a lot of points.
This is going to be a Graham Gano special. If the Giants are going to win this game, Graham Gano is going to have at least 9 points in this game, because that's the type of offense the Giants have. And to your point, if you can hurry Heinicke up, make him turn, because Heinicke has the irrational confidence of a guy who knows if I mess up, whatever, I still have a chance in this league based on how a lot of his games have gone. He's liable for one heat check throw every single game where he's just going to rip it as hard as he can into triple coverage because he doesn't have great arm strength. So he's got to put his entire body into the throw. He's really prone to doing this in the red zone where he will try and throw a ball as hard as he possibly can and hit Terry McLaurin or Logan Thomas off of one of these corners. And I was looking at the injury report before we got on. All four of the Giants, 1 through 4 corners, are on the injury report. All of them did not practice. That is not a good sign for a secondary that got carved up against Dallas. Washington, their passing game is not the strength, but Terry McLaurin is going to be open in this game. Logan Thomas, we know the Giants can cover tight ends to save their lives. Jahan Dotson is a pretty good skill position wide receiver. Hasn't really been as good as he was early in the season. Brian Robinson, pretty good in the running game. And then they'll have Gibson in there on passing downs. Antonio Gibson's a pretty good athlete, and the Giants don't have good linebackers. This is a matchup problem for the Giants. Even though Washington is going to want to run the ball in this game, the Giants don't have the horses to play coverage against Washington in this game, which is something to be concerned about, because if you have to respect their ability to pass, you're going to be liable to give up easier running plays. And that is going to play into how Washington wants this game to go. If you can soften the Giants up a little bit, a couple incremental underneath things, soften the defense up a little bit where they're respecting the pass, putting that extra defensive back on the midfield, being a nickel, then if you're sitting a nickel, especially if you got a too high look, that's inviting Washington to run the ball, which they want to do. This is a matchup problem for the Giants.
It is. They do have very good skill position players, not just at receiver, but Logan Thomas, the tight end, and in the backfield, Antonio Gibson's a really good pass-catching running back who can cause problems for the Giants linebackers. One of the things for the Giants we talked about in terms of injuries, Daniel Bellinger coming back is huge because he was sort of transforming into a security blanket for Daniel Jones. But on top of that, he was a very good run-blocking tight end. He was huge for the running game. So if he comes back and can play, his injury is sort of tricky, like we talked about last week. I don't know how much ramp up he needs. Can he go limited all week in terms of practice and then play Sunday? Maybe. But if he can come back, and it looks like he's on track to play Sunday, having him being able to, you know, be available in terms of catching passes, with the Giants desperately need pass catchers, and then on top of that, helping the run game, going to be a huge addition to the Giants. And I think you'll see how impactful he can be for the Giants offense. Some other notes that I did write down for this game is Darius Slayton has 5 games where he's had 50-plus receiving yards. And it seems like if they want to throw the ball deep, it's typically going to Darius Slayton. They don't throw it often deep, but when they do, Slayton is that. And it's just been a tremendous story when you think about where Darius Slayton was in August on the trade block. I mean, I think if you would have thrown a large pizza at the Giants, they would have given you Darius Slayton. I mean, they were basically begging anyone to trade for him. They didn't. But now he's sort of becoming a player that's indispensable, where they might have to bring him back next season in terms of, you know, giving him a contract extension. But I think Washington has a very underrated secondary. They have a couple guys, and we'll talk to our guest later about this, but they do have – their defense is playing very well, and it's really a lot to do with their defensive line, but they have guys in the secondary that can cause havoc. But I think for Slayton, 5 straight games, 50-plus receiving yards, I think you can continue to see him be a big part of the Giants passing game, because he's probably their only option.
I don't know if you saw it or not, but Talking Giants did a clip about on Twitter the other day. I think it was yesterday, about what the Giants were doing schematically, just because the Giants got receivers cannot get open. They cannot get open because they're not fast enough. They don't have the burst. So when you have that problem, you have to schematically get them open, where you have overlapping routes, where you have things like slide routes, which is just the tight end coming across the formation behind the line of scrimmage, just to get Jones in a rhythm. Bellinger coming back will help with that a lot, because Lawrence Cager, as we know, cannot block. He's an okay pass catcher. But if you can get him and Bellinger on the field at the same time, you have Slayton out there and you're sitting in 12 with two tight ends on the field, that opens things up for you a little bit more, especially in the passing game. Washington's linebackers are okay. I think the Giants will have opportunities over the middle of the field, especially if Bellinger is in this game, maybe allow Jones to throw a little more. I did have a question for you, though. Do you think it's been a conscious decision to not have as many Daniel Jones designed runs? Because earlier in the season, we saw the Giants have a lot of success with designed runs, where it was QB power, it was QB sweep, especially in those short yardage situations, kind of what the Bills do with Josh Allen, where it's, okay, Josh, we need this first down, go get it. Whereas now the Giants offense is in real dire straits where they really can't move the ball. And they're just not good at calling Jones's number in those short yardage situations when you know he's good at that.
It was weird because in the Dallas game, they called it on the first drive and it was successful. Yeah. And then they didn't call it again. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I think some of the play calling has been very questionable, very conservative. It's strange to me, not just the fact that they don't let Daniel Jones run the ball. I think at some point you got to let him throw the ball. And I understand, you know, you want to limit the mistakes and all that, but you know, it's either going to work or it's not. Allow yourself to find that out. You know, like, don't just go the entire game by throwing the ball, you know, over 15 or 20 yards two or three times. Like, I think you have to give, you know, find out, hey, listen, can Isaiah Hodgins make a play? Something. Can it, like, do give yourself a shot? And I think they last couple weeks, they've really not done that. Although I think in the Dallas game, we saw a little bit more of it, especially early on. But it's all, look, their style of play is, hey, keep it close, run the ball, eat the clock, get to the fourth quarter with the game, you know, tied or within reach, and then, you know, pull them into the deep end and see if the team can swim. But the problem is they just haven't had that opportunity the last 2 weeks because they've fallen behind. So when you fall behind, your game plan of running the ball, RPO, chewing clock, it just goes away. So what's there left to do? Well, you gotta throw the ball deep. I think last week in the fourth quarter against the Cowboys, what we saw was like they were running the ball, you know, when they needed two scores. It's like, well, why are you doing that? It was like, that's all they can do. You know, they can't throw the ball deep. They simply can't. Whether it's a lack of trust in Daniel Jones, a lack of receivers, a little bit of both, they just simply can't do it, or at least they don't think they can do it. I think they should at least give themselves an opportunity to see if it'll work. And against the Lions, you saw that. Against the Cowboys, you saw that. It's difficult because, you know, on one hand, look, I think Daniel Jones has improved. Has he improved enough to where you can say, hey, Daniel, here's the ball. You know, I need you to put together a touchdown drive. I don't know. I don't think they have the personnel for that. And I don't know if it's as simple as, hey, they don't have the receivers. Like, that's the easy answer. Well, they don't have the receivers. Or is the answer more complex, where it's like, hey, they don't trust Daniel Jones nearly enough as maybe we think they should or do. And whether it's running the football with Daniel Jones more because you're scared he's going to get hurt, or whether it's throwing the football deep with Daniel Jones because you're scared he's prone to make a mistake, I think there's something with Jones that this coaching staff doesn't fully trust. And it's pretty evident because of what we've seen, even when they're playing from behind, how committed they are to not necessarily allowing him to keep the ball and run or throw.
One thing I would like to see a little bit more of, and you touched on this on Tuesday, multiple running back formations. They have three athletic running backs on this team. I know we don't have a lot of wide receiver and tight end depth. Get Brightwell on the field with Saquon. Get Breida on the field with Saquon. Have them out of the backfield. Line them up at receiver. You got to get a little gimmicky. I know they were doing that a lot earlier in the season to success, the trick plays, the wildcat stuff, and they've completely gone away from stuff that was working earlier in the season. I understand you don't want to keep running the same stuff over and over again, because once it's on tape, tape, other teams can adapt to it. But a lot of the creative stuff we saw from this offense earlier in the season, the manufacturer offense, they've just completely gone away from. And to your point about, we don't know how dinged up Saquon is. We don't know why they're not letting Jones have as much of a decision on the outcome of the game as they can. These are things you can do when your offense isn't great. You think about what offenses that are struggling do. The Giants haven't broken out a gimmicky double pass in a couple of weeks. They haven't had a wildcat play down in the red zone. They haven't had an offensive lineman report eligible as a pass catcher. Just the little gimmicky things you can do when your offense is struggling. We haven't seen that in quite a while from them.
I think the big thing down, not just for this game, is if the Giants are going to, I'll say, make the playoffs, they are going to need their passing offense, not just the quarterback, not just the receivers, their Everyone. Passing offense as a whole, to be better. They're not going to be able to win games handing the ball off to Saquon Barkley 35 times. It's just not, it's not capable.
Especially because he's hurt.
Yeah, especially because he's banged up, the wear and tear. He's just not going to do it. It worked against Houston, right? But even in that Houston game, like, they forced turnovers. Like, Houston got into the red zone and were going to score. But, you know, they forced turnovers. Davis Mills is not a good quarterback. But when you're facing Jared Goff, Dak Prescott, you know, Jalen Hurts, Kirk Cousins, you know, these quarterbacks that can move the ball, you know, you're going to need to not go toe-to-toe in terms of passing, but – you know, you're going to have to score points. And to score points in this league, you're going to need to throw the ball. You can't just rely heavily on your defense, especially how banged up it is. So, you know, this week with Taylor Heinicke, Taylor Heinicke's not in that tier where, you know, where Hurts and Kirk Cousins and, you know, Dak Prescott was. But at the same time, like, you know, Washington has skill position players where they can make it pretty easy for Heinicke to get them the ball. So, I just think you need something from your passing offense. You talk about scheming guys open. I think scheming guys open only works so far.
Yeah.
There are going to be times where Daniel Jones is going to have to make a play. And I think that this whole conversation with Jones, it's such a toxic conversation because you can't have it on Twitter.
Because there's no right answer, because we don't know. Well, we really don't know.
Not just with the right answer, because if you make a statement about Daniel Jones, there's always pushback from one side. Daniel Jones misses a pass. Well, the receiver didn't finish the route. Well, it's like he missed the throw. He missed the throw. So you, even if it's a limited pass attempts, you're gonna need Daniel Jones to not make mistakes, not miss throws, not throw interceptions. And he can't do that. Like, that can't happen. And in the past couple weeks, it's happened where he overthrew Lawrence Cager against Detroit. Interception. You know, he threw an interception to Aiden Hutchinson. It was a great play by Aiden Hutchinson, but he threw a pick. You can't have him turn the ball over. Against Dallas, he missed a throw to Richie James that could have been a first down. The throw to Saquon Barkley. Look, I understand Saquon should have caught the pass, but Daniel Jones should have thrown a better ball. And if he did, Saquon Barkley is still running to this day because there was nobody there to tackle him. So, when you struggle to score points and you struggle to move the football and you're in a tight game, You're not good enough to have a large margin of error. Like, the margin of error with the Giants, this team is very, very thin. It's very, very thin. So when one mistake happens, it's magnified because the impact of it's typically, you know, it's pretty large. Whether it's a drop pass, whether it's a fumble, whether it's a penalty that calls a touchdown back, like, the margin for error is so thin. They cannot overcome certain things that other teams can. And when you're playing, you know, some of these good teams that they're going to be playing down the stretch, that margin for error gets even thinner because you know you're so – that team is so much more talented than you that you have to play the perfect game just to be in the game in the fourth quarter.
And that's the thing. The Giants have absolutely no margin for error because they cannot come back. We've seen it now 2 weeks in a row, what happens when they get behind multiple scores. They're incapable of throwing the ball, as we've been discussing the last 5-10 minutes or so. And when you can't throw the ball, it's impossible to move the offense quickly. Sure, it's great. You can pick up 6-7 yards a carry. You know how many carries it takes to get up the field, getting 5-6 yards a carry? It's just not feasible to come back in a short period of time when you're a run first offense. And it's why they need to get something going in other facets of the game, whether it's passing the ball, whether it's Jones as a runner, whether it's straight read option stuff, which they haven't done in a while other than down in the red zone. There's going to be a point in this game where Jones is going to be needing to make a play, and we don't know if the coaching staff trusts him to make the play. We don't know if anybody is going to be open to make the play. There are just a lot of things working against the Giants right now. Everything is kind of snowballing at the moment. They've lost a couple games in a row. They haven't looked particularly good, especially on offense, in a couple of weeks. This isn't easy. Washington's going to get heat on Jones. That's a really good defensive line. Even if Chase Young doesn't play, Deron Payne is very good. Jonathan Allen is very good. They're defensive backs are going to not have to play coverage that long because their front seven gets heat. These are all things working against the Giants, and this is a real matchup problem, even on offense and on defense. Washington's got great skill guys, and Washington's defense, they force turnovers the way the Giants were forcing turnovers the last couple of weeks before the game got away from them. It's going to be a matter of, can you force Heinicke to make more mistakes than Jones? And if it's still a close game and the turnover margin is close, you're going to need whichever team skill guy makes a big play, and Washington's got a lot more of them. Terry McLaurin is going to have opportunities in this game, and the Giants really aren't going to be able to do anything about it because all of their corners are dinged up.
Yeah. One of the things you talked about was about the big plays in the run game.
Yeah.
Saquon Barkley's longest run against Dallas was 10 yards. Against Detroit, it was 4 yards. Against Houston, it was 27 yards. Against Seattle, it was 15 yards. Against Jacksonville, it was 20 yards. And against Baltimore, it was 8 yards. Prior to that, he had games where he had a 40-yard play, 29-yard play, 36-yard play, and the big 68-yarder against Tennessee in week one. So that big play in the run game is not necessarily there.
Yeah.
So what that means is more plays to get down the field, like you mentioned. And especially when you're not getting that home run play from your best offensive player, that plays a role. Even in the pass game, I mean, longest play receiving, 5 yards, 7 yards, 8 yards, 12 yards, 9 yards, 5 yards. So more plays, more opportunities, or more ways, or more opportunities that you can make a mistake. Because when you're
very true,
running, you know, so that's, it plays a role. So against this team, like when I look at the Washington, the keys of victory, obviously you run the ball well, you play defense, but you're going to need a big play from your offense or two big plays from your offense. Like, that's going to happen because Washington, they do get those big plays. It's the last couple weeks with Heinicke starting, they have had, I believe, at least one play of 30 or more yards every single game that he started. So that, like, he can get the big play for them. It's going to be up to the Giants passing game whether they can get it. Washington gives up, you know, 108 yards on the ground. You know, the Giants give up 138.
Yeah.
So, Brian, you're going to have to stop Brian Robinson, but then they have Antonio Gibson as well. You're going to have to really bog down on their run game. You're going to have to get pressure on Taylor Heinicke. They're going to have to force turnovers. You can't allow Taylor Heinicke to sit back, because even though we don't think highly of Heinicke, they have good enough skill position players where they can get open really, really fast, and Taylor Heinicke just has to get them the ball. So if you're not getting pressure, it is going to be a problem for you, especially when you're dealing with the skill players that the Commanders have. With all that being said, I think the Giants are, what, 2.5 underdog?
Underdog.
What's your gut telling you? Obviously, I think if they win this game, they're pretty much, I'm not going to call it a lock, but you can start preparing for January football. Do they win this game, yes or no?
I'm going to say yes, because every fiber of my being is saying no, they're not going to win this game. And that's typically when they've won games this year, when I don't expect them to win or to play well. For whatever reason, this team plays better as an underdog. When they're not expected to do anything, that's when we've seen them at their best this year, against Tennessee, against Baltimore, against Green Bay, against pretty good teams that are better than Washington. We've seen the Giants manage to hang around long enough, and that's the kind of game they're going to need. They're going to need to make a couple big plays and find a way. It's been a few weeks since they found a way to win. It's time to find a way to win again.
I'm going with the Giants too. I think they're going to, I feel very comfortable that they're going to win this game. I think the guys that they're getting back is going to be big. Bellinger, Aziz Ojulari. I think these are pretty big.
Evan Neal.
Yeah, Evan Neal. I mean, these are pretty significant additions to the Giants that they're getting back. I think it's going to be a close game. I think nobody's going to score 20 points. I think it's going to be like 19-17 or something like that. But I do think the Giants take care of this, of the Commanders at home. I just think that they're not necessarily more talented, but I do think they're a better football team than the Commanders. And I think Heinicke does make a couple mistakes. He didn't play well against Atlanta. So, no. And he does those boneheaded things where he'll throw across the field and he'll throw a pick. He really believes that he's Brett Favre. So Brett Favre on the field, not off the field. I hope he doesn't feel like he's Brett Favre off the field. That would not be good for society. But anyways, I think the Giants win this game. I'm fairly comfortable in saying that. I'm confident in that. All right, let's do – before we get to our interview with JP Finley, NBC Sports Washington, let's do Mojo, stock up, stock down. I'll throw a couple of questions toward you. But let's start with the Giants. And let's start with their receiving corps, because everybody, all eyes are on their receiving corps right now. Like, what's going to happen? Is Odell Beckham coming? He's scheduled to visit today. We're recording on Thursday. We'll see what happens there. I'm not fully ruling it out. I know other people are, but I'm just not. I think when a guy visits, that means that both sides are interested. But anyways, we'll see how that plays out. Isaiah Hodgins, who's a guy that I think you like, I like. He's sort of overtaken Kenny Golladay. He's the number three on the depth chart. I think he's between him, Darius Slay, and Richie James. You can make the case that it's Darius Slay and Isaiah Hodgins, but lo and behold, on the depth chart, he's number three. He's only at $1.70 a share. His price tag is pretty cheap. Obviously, we know the Giants' receiving core is depleted. He should have had a touchdown against the Cowboys.
Yeah.
That was called back. Are you buying Isaiah Hodgins stock as we enter the final six games of the season where the Giants are going to play opponents where they're going to have to throw the ball?
You got me feeling like Leo in The Wolf of Wall Street buying penny stocks right now, talking about
that's,
Isaiah.
That's what it is. That's what the Giants receiving core is. It's penny stocks. You need to...
Isaiah Hodgins gets two targets a week. Unless he gets a touchdown by accident, no. He doesn't touch the ball enough. He doesn't really have a featured role in this offense. I would not be buying Isaiah Hodgins, no.
Saquon Barkley, a lot of talk's been made about him and whether or not, you know, he can bounce back or is he just too worn down. We talked about earlier, the Commanders rank eighth. In the NFL in rushing yards allowed per game. I do expect a big bounce back game from Saquon Barkley. And I think that'll be reflected on his share price on Mojo. His price is at $19. It's dropped. You buying Barkley stock for the rest of the season?
From what I've been reading, no. I'm a friend of the show, Dan Duggan's column this week, he had a mailbag, and one of the questions is about, is Saquon just worn out? Is he hurt? And Dan pointed out that since he left the Green Bay game with that shoulder thing and came back in the game, his yards per attempt is down by like 0.75 yards, which that's a noticeable decline in quality, especially when you think about somebody who isn't getting the explosive plays anymore. So if even his short yardage carries are going for 3 yards as opposed to 3.5, 4 yards, that matters over the course of a long game. I don't think he's been the same player since he left the game. He's been more inclined to go out of bounds and avoid contact and not just trucking over guys like he was the first couple of weeks of the season. I do think he's probably dealing with a nagging shoulder injury. It's probably why he hasn't been featured in the pass game that much. He's only averaging 3-4 pass targets a game. And this is somebody we know can catch the ball very well and be explosive in the passing game. So I'm going to say I'm selling on Saquon too, because he's playing dinged up. It's really obvious. Based on all of the statistical indicators and just how he's playing contact right now.
Earlier in the season, Daniel Bellinger was right around that $3.20 mark on Mojo when he was developing into having a significant role with the Giants. He's, hypothetically speaking, let's say he's back $2.43. There's a legit shot that over the next six games, his stock goes up really high because we saw his role in the Giants offense sort of, you know, really develop, and he become that security blanket. Now, I don't care what you say. I'm buying Bellinger stock at $2 and, you know, what, 50 cents right now?
Yeah, no, Bellinger has a role in this offense. We saw him getting probably 5-6 targets a game by the time he was fully implemented in the offense. We've seen them throw the ball to Cager a bunch the last couple of weeks. Not a ton, probably like 5-6 targets a game, only coming down with like 2 or 3 of those. There's a role for the tight end in this offense. They want to have multiple tight ends on the field to run the ball because it's a tendency breaker. When you have tight ends on the two tight ends on the field, that typically is a running formation. For the Giants, when they've been successful throwing the ball this year, it's when they've had two tight ends on the field. Having Bellinger back helps with that. You're going to be more inclined to throw the ball. And we know he gets open, and yeah, he falls down as soon as he catches the ball, but at least he catches the ball.
He also scores in on Bellinger. He also scores touchdowns too.
He does. He does.
There was a question I wanted to ask. I want to have a discussion about this. There's a, you know, this quarterback class has been very, you know,
this year you're talking about
last year. So we haven't seen a lot of rookie quarterbacks play. We saw Malik Willis play a little bit in Tennessee when Ryan Tannehill got hurt. Did not go well. There's a lot of young quarterbacks on the bench right now, not just from this past draft, but, you know, overall. There's three names I want to throw at you, and I want you to tell me which one do you believe will play this season.
Okay.
And I'm going to give you their Mojo stock price, and you can buy one.
Okay.
Mojo prices go up significantly when a backup becomes a starter. Sam Howell, $4.66. We'll see what happens in Washington. If this thing goes bad and Heinicke continues to be bad, do they go back to Wentz or do they go to Sam Howell? I don't know. Desmond Ridder, $7.66. We know what's happening in Atlanta. Their season's starting to derail, although they're still in the division, you know, because the division is so bad. And then there's Jordan Love, $5.60. Look, I know Aaron Rodgers is saying he's, as long as they're in contention, he's going to play. But at $5.60, Jordan Love's the only right answer, right? Like,
I think he's the only one that intrigues me. Sam Howell, even if he gets in, I was very high on Sam Howell 3 years ago. The pandemic year, he was really good that season. He had a real chance at winning the Heisman. He could have been a first-round pick if he came out that year. He stayed the extra year. They didn't have a running game. He didn't have any of his skill guys because they both got drafted. And it was just – it was ugly. And I think – they'd be more inclined to go to Wentz if they still feel like they can make a playoff spot, just because Wentz has experience and we know how much NFL coaches value experience. Even if it's not good experience, some experience is better than none. Ridder, I would like to have seen, to be honest with you, at this point, because they have nothing to lose. I know Kyle Pitts had surgery. He's done for the year, but they still have Drake London. They're going to have Cordarrelle Patterson back. They have Zacchaeus, who's a decent deep threat. The Falcons offense has the capability to be good, but again, until we see him play, I think you're right. I think it has to be Jordan Love, because we know it's that situation in Green Bay is weird. It's gone very bad for them this year, but he looked pretty good coming in for Rodgers when Rodgers was hurt. He looked okay. I think if they're out of it, I think there's a real shot they go to Jordan Love and we start the QB carousel for next offseason as soon as Rodgers doesn't start a game, because they're going to be team.
You have to play Jordan Love, right? Like, you drafted him in the first round.
The rest of that defense is super young. For the most part, that entire defense, that defense will come back next year. Green Bay will expect to be in the playoffs again. Yeah, they got to address skill position. They still got a really good running game. The coach we know can call offense reasonably well. They need to get some receivers in there. They need to get a tight end who can catch the ball in there. But the defense isn't bad, at least on paper. It hasn't played well this year, but the defense on paper is not bad. Green Bay wants to be a playoff team next year, and they'll have the ability to if the quarterback position is solid. I think you're right. I think you have to buy Jordan Love just because I don't think Sam Howell is stable enough for Ron Rivera to trust him. And Desmond Ridder, he should be playing at this point. I don't understand why they've ridden Mariota this long. He's not really giving them anything. It was a nice story the first couple of weeks where he was playing all right, but at this point, Ridder can do the same things with the read option and running the ball. You might as well see what you got.
Yeah, I'm with you with Love, man. I just think the Packers owe it to themselves because this offseason they have to make the decision on his fifth-year option.
Yeah.
And whatever happens with Rodgers, you know, whether he comes back or doesn't, or you have to see what Jordan Love is.
Yes.
Even if he doesn't have a future in Green Bay, like, you have to play him. Like, what happens if he plays well? A team can offer you something. Or what happens if he plays so well that you're like, I'm ready to move off? Like, you have to play Jordan Love, and that's why I am buying Jordan Love stock. I think if it's not this week, we are very close to seeing Jordan Love's time in Green Bay.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. You have to. Like you said, you used a first-round pick on him, and he has one start in 3 years, 4 years, something like that. Yeah.
That was Stock Up, Stock Down, presented by Mojo. I think we're ready for JP Finley. We now welcome on JP Finley of NBC Sports Washington. He's also, you can find him on 106 The Fan in Washington, weekdays 10 to 2. JP is the guy that I go to whenever something happens with the Washington Commanders football team. JP, what's going on, my man?
Not much, man. How you doing?
Good, good. So we're going to dive right into it. Obviously, it's a big game for both teams, which probably was not something we thought was going to happen at the beginning of the season, certainly not for the Giants, but meaningful December football is always fun. Before we get into the game, I wanted to ask you about the Washington Commanders organization. I think we'll start with what happened last week with the Sean Taylor Memorial thing. From the outside looking in, when I heard about them doing a memorial, I thought, okay, here comes a nice statue, Sean Taylor, the mannequin. Can you please explain that to me as somebody who's around the team?
No, I mean, there's no real explanation. They botched it. Should have been a statue. They were clear. They never said statue. But if you look around the league, and I've been at every stadium in the NFL, the teams that have, you know, that honor former players, none of them look like that. None of them are a mannequin with a jersey on it that the player never wore. So, it was embarrassing. This team has now done embarrassing things around Sean Taylor's memorial in the last 2 years. And I just want them to stop. Like, they can't get it right. Just please stop doing it.
Yeah, I think that would be a good way to put it up, just to stop doing it. Other things around the Washington Commanders, obviously Daniel Snyder, whether he'll sell the team or not. I think he's going to sell the team. What do you know? What's the latest on that? Is it still, like, up in the air? It's going to happen? Is there a timetable for this? Are there potential buyers that we've heard of, you know, Amazon's Jeff Bezos, but is there anybody else that could pop up that could potentially buy this team?
Yeah, man, there's no real clarity on it. Bezos has obviously become kind of the front runner, and there's talk about, like, him partnering up with Jay-Z and Matthew McConaughey, and you wonder if, like, Durant's name would get thrown around, all these kind of, like, celebrity Washington fans. I think if there's a secondary – if Bezos wants it, I don't see – you know, there's nobody on the planet really that can outbid him. There's some complications there with Amazon owning Thursday Night Football now. And if you're the other owners around the league, do you really want the richest dude in the world buying a team that can just outbid you on everything? And does that tilt the power too much to one person? Or do other owners look at him and say, hey, he's going to pay $8 billion for a franchise or whatever the number is. That'll drive the value of my team up that much more. So, you know, if it's not Bezos, I think this dude, Chris Harris, that owns the Sixers and owns the Devils, becomes a real candidate. He came in second in the race to buy the Broncos. We'll see, man. I think, you know, early on there was this assumption that they wanted to get everything done fast and it could be done by the league meetings at the end of March. And Dan Snyder's not a person that usually does what others want him to do. And I imagine he's enjoying this, like, you know, late season hot streak the Commanders are on. So I'm not expecting any sort of fast, simple sales process here. It could happen, certainly, but they are up for sale. I think they get sold eventually. I won't be stunned if Dan tries to drag it out over a number of years, and that, you know, maybe he takes on a limited partner, and then 3 years down the road, that limited partner gets majority shareholder, like that kind of thing. I don't think it's going to be as simple as everybody maybe wants or hopes.
How important do you think it is that Washington eventually gets a change in ownership to get the direction of the organization going in a certain way?
It's massive. And I mean, they've got one playoff win in 23 years. Like, they fired coaches, they fired GMs, they've had different quarterbacks, they've had different philosophies. Like, there's one constant in all of his tenure, and it's been, you know, a failure on and off the field, and the only one constant is him.
That's a great way to sum it up. Let's talk on the field. Taylor Heinicke comes in. I mean, people just call him a winner. It seems like the Commanders become a different team when he's on the field, whether he was replacing, you know, an injured Alex Smith or now Carson Wentz. What is it with Heinicke? And is this a situation now where the Commanders are looking at it and saying, okay, we don't know if he's a quote unquote franchise quarterback, but he's earned the shot to, you know, essentially not just be the starter the remainder of the season, but hey, this could be a potential situation where we give him a shot to be the starter an entire season next year, where he goes through the whole offseason as the quote unquote quarterback one. What is the quarterback situation like in Washington right now with Heinicke?
It's interesting. I mean, right now it's Heinicke's team, but it's Heinicke's team right until it isn't. Like, if he goes to the Meadowlands this weekend and throws three picks and they lose, I think they'd go back to Wentz quick.
Wow.
I don't think he has much of a leash built up at all. But the fans and the guys in the locker room love him. He's incredibly likable, humble, yet has some swag to him. He's just got to play better. I mean, he had 138 yards passing last week. That kind of performance doesn't keep you starting very often. And unfortunately, the way the league is, especially if you know, there's not a ton of guaranteed money or a high draft status or all those kinds of things. And he said it. Like, he had a press conference yesterday and said, I got to play better. He missed a touchdown throw to Terry McLaurin in the third quarter, had a real bad pick just before halftime. He's got to play better. Like, if he plays better and they keep winning, Wentz isn't coming back in. So it's kind of his job to lose. As for next year, they got to admit they made a mistake with this Wentz trade. They got to release him. That'll free up a ton of cash on the salary cap. But, dude, they're going to end up drafting, depending how the rest of the year shakes out, maybe they draft 18, maybe they draft like 24, right? Like, you're probably not getting a QB there. I don't know that there's a guy you go nuts for in this draft and try to go up and get. I would not be stunned if – now, Heinicke's slated for unrestricted free agency. So, I don't know what you have to pay Taylor going forward, but kind of the, like, Mitch Trubisky, Jacoby Brissett price tag, four, five, six, 7 mil, something like that, seems kind of reasonable. And they drafted a kid last year, Sam Howell, right, who they're legit excited about, and they wanted to give him a full year of just watching. Like, if they come back next year and are like, all right, it's a Heinicke Howell quarterback competition, I wouldn't be shocked at all.
What is it about the way Heinicke is in this offense that's allowed it to be a little bit more successful as opposed to the first couple of weeks where Carson was running it?
Dude, I don't know how much of it is Heinicke. There's a lot of factors. Their offensive line got healthier. They had a center playing that hadn't played football in 2 years, like was out of the league, like not like a backup, like was out of the league. Like, he couldn't make shotgun snaps. He was rolling them back to Carson, and Carson would then get rocked, and everybody's like, oh, Wentz didn't get rid of the ball. They got rookie running back Brian Robinson was on the IR the first month. He came back, and then he has certainly started to show who he is now. I think those are huge factors. I think he avoids sacks way better than Wentz. Wentz has a better arm, can get downfield more. They both turn the ball over about the same amount of time. Like, if you look at Heinicke and Wentz's stats, neither of them are very good. But what Taylor does is avoids more bad plays, especially Wentz was sacked 23 times in six starts. Heinicke in six starts has been sacked 9 times. Like, that's a very tangible difference. But they're also, since Heinicke came in, since week six, from week six to week 12, they're second in the NFL in carries per game. They're on average rushing the ball 36 times a game. That was like 22 when Wentz was starting. Like, they wanted to be this pass first team with Carson. Then they had to go to Heinicke, and they're like, all right, this is not what we can do. We got to run the ball. So, you know, everything has kind of shifted, but neither quarterback, I don't think either quarterback is the reason this team is succeeding.
That's
or the
fair.
Sole reason, anyway.
That's fair. And I want to ask you about the defense, and it's sort of a question about the quarterback, too. Back in 2020, the conversation was when Washington had the number two pick, Chase Young, no questions asked. And one of the things I brought up to people, I actually live in the Washington, D.C., Metro Maryland area. I live in Silver Spring, Maryland. So I do listen to 106 all the time, especially
where'd after you go to high school?
Blake High School.
All right, I went to BCC.
Okay. All right. Okay. I listen when things are going wrong with Washington, because as a fan of the Giants, you always want to hear the opposing, you know, your rivals. Yeah, I love that. I love that. I think a lot of fans are like that too. But I always used to say during that draft, like, Washington should take Justin Herbert. Like, to me, like, they need a quarterback. Now, they didn't. But my perception on Ron Rivera is, like, he doesn't take the quarterback position seriously enough as he should. And I think they've had situations where they've been in position to grab a franchise-altering quarterback, but they just didn't do it. Chase Young now, I mean, we're going on, I think, a full season where he hasn't played, and I don't know when he's going to come back. It seems like every week it's like, this is the week, but we're not there yet. Is there conversations like, hey, we should have took Justin Herbert, like that? Why wasn't that a legitimate option at the time?
I think it's more fan-driven. I think fans have that conversation. I don't think the folks in that building are really having that conversation. And there's a lot of factors. When they took Chase 2 overall, they had just drafted Haskins the year before, 15th.
Right.
And there was, you know, ideally Haskins was going to become their quarterback. And probably the best he ever looked in Washington was like the last month of that 2019 season before he hurt his ankle. Like, he looked like he might be able to develop into something. So, like, in a vacuum, if you just look at the 2020 draft, sure, they should have. And I think the conversation then would have been about Tua and not Herbert. And Tua looks good this year. But regardless, if you just look at that draft, you're like, damn, man, they passed on Herbert and Tua for a guy that's been hurt. But if you remember that they had just drafted Haskins in the first round, that's why quarterback wasn't really on the table for them. Which was a mistake in hindsight, obviously, but at the time it was a very reasonable thought process. I think Ron not taking the quarterback position seriously, I think that's been true in Washington. I think last season when the plan was just to go with Fitzpatrick, I found it fairly audacious then, and certainly in hindsight, that was a mistake. Now, you weren't expecting a season-ending hip injury, but, like, Fitz was nothing but a journeyman that, you know, throws a pick for every touchdown. Like, how is that your plan?
Right.
And then this year, you know, they in their minds, they made a move, but I was never excited. I've gotten to know him. Carson's a really nice guy, but I think his best days of playing quarterback in the NFL are long past. So, but the flip side, to say that he doesn't take the position seriously, like his first ever draft pick as an NFL coach was Cam Newton. So I don't know. Like, I think getting the quarterback, I mean, hell, how's it going in New York with Danny Dimes? Like, getting the quarterback position right is really, really hard. And I don't think I think the reality of quarterback in the NFL is there's – what are there? Seven really good ones, then just a bunch of dudes, and then just a bunch of guys that suck. Like, it's just really hard to get right. I'm not sure certainly you go back to 2020 and you know what we know now. I mean, hell, Dwayne passed away at this point, right? Like, so much has happened. But in that frame of mind, like, Ron had just gotten the job. I am sure that the owner, Snyder, who's always been way too involved in quarterback selection, told him, hey, Dwayne's our guy. You're ready to work with him, right? And Ron's like, yeah, can't wait. Because there was a lot of excitement that first year about Scott Turner working with Dwayne Haskins and Ron's ability to develop Cam and blah, blah, blah. Like, it sounds so ridiculous now because of everything we know, but at the time, it was, like, very real.
Let's touch on this game Sunday, obviously meaningful December football. What are your thoughts? I think the Washington Commanders' game plan is pretty simple. You talked about it. They run the football now. They play defense, which is sort of what the Giants do. They run the ball. They play defense. Limit the amount of times their quarterback is asked to throw just because he is prone to make mistakes. Washington, I always say, they have very good skill position players, especially at receivers. Giants corners are banged up with the Dory Jackson. How do you see this thing playing out? What are the keys to victory for Washington in this game?
Got to run the ball. That's clearly what they've established. You want to get Brian Robinson going. You'd love to have a little bit in the pass game. It sounds so ridiculous, but you'd love just like a 250-yard passing day, which is hardly a big day. But, I mean, Taylor's been under 200 yards or right at it for about the last month. And then their defense just has to control the line of scrimmage. And I know the Giants are getting some pieces back on the O-line, which might make that more difficult. But John Allen, I think John Allen's having a legit all-pro year. I mean, you guys will see on Sunday how well he's playing. Daron Payne, Montez Sweat are playing really well. Their first rounder last year was a linebacker, this kid Jamin Davis, who had a rough rookie season. He's really
Giants liked him a lot, too.
Yeah, I mean, he's really started to turn it on. The Commanders have one of the most underrated safeties in the NFL, and Cam Curl, young guy Derek Forrest. Like, they're playing good defense on all three levels, and I'd expect that to continue. And I think they'll be able to commit to the run to stopping Saquon because of kind of the Giants – whether it's design or injury or what, there's not a lot of talent on the edges there. So I think, Heineke can't turn it over. If you turn it over, and I think the Giants have been really – their turnover margin's really strong. I've been impressed that Jones is throwing far less picks than normal. So,
well, he doesn't throw as much anymore as he used to. That's a big reason why. He's played a lot better, probably playing himself into another opportunity, but – they're just limiting the amount of times he throws the ball, which is, you want to cut turnovers, that's how you do it. That's one way to do it.
Same thing with Heineke.
Yeah. Well, hey, JP, it was fun having you on. You have a prediction for us for Sunday?
Dude, I think the Commanders win, man, which is
– they are favorites.
Meadowlands has been a tough place for them to play over the years. I've covered a lot of, like, kind of stunning losses up there, but I think they got something cooking. So I think I'm curious, like I've kind of thought the Giants were a little bit of smoke and mirrors. Like, they got off to the hot start and it kind of just built on itself. But I think maybe things are kind of settling, evening out.
They have exceeded expectation. Meaningful December football was not in the cards at the beginning of the year. This team lacks a lot of talent at key areas. They're also really, really banged up. So we'll see. I think it's still ultimately going to come down to which quarterback makes the less mistakes is going to win this game. That's what simply is going to come down to that, because they're both pretty similar in terms of how they play. But hey, JP, I want to thank you for coming on. You guys can follow JP Finley. His at is at JP Finley NBCS. JP, any final words?
Nah, man, appreciate it.
This rivalry it's getting good. I like it when these two teams play meaningful football. Everyone pays attention to the rest of the NFC East, but this is a good rivalry too.
Yep. Been doing it a long time.
Yep. Thanks.
Thank you.
Take care. Thank you. No problem, guys. Take care.
That was our interview with JP Finley of NVC Sports. He's my go-to guy when shit's going on with the Commanders. Like, I always go to his timeline. Big game Sunday, meaningful football. That's our episode. We'll talk again next week. Any final words, Nick?
Please win this game.
Yes, they will. They're going to win this game. Very, very confident in that. Peace.